This is the Voice of America, Studio One.
Greetings, my friends. I am Monka. You have asked, why have we not contacted people in a...
This is purported to be a message brought to Earth by an extraterrestrial, a crew member of what some call UFOs, unidentified flying objects, or simply flying saucers. The message was recorded by this man.
I am Gabriel Green, president of the Amalgamated Flying Saucer Clubs of America. It's a nonprofit organization designed to bring a greater measure of freedom to all mankind through the application of the universal laws and principles that we have received from extraterrestrial sources. Our goals are to bring physical, spiritual, and economic emancipation of mankind.
For the last 11 years, I have been investigating some of the most mysterious, some of the famous UFO cases. And in every instance, I have found that if one digs deeply enough and works hard enough, that there always emerges a very prosaic terrestrial explanation for all of these cases.
Philip Klass, an aviation writer and author of the book UFOs Explained.
In many cases, people are indeed seeing something that they're having trouble identifying. And so in that sense, we can say that, yes, they have seen unidentified flying objects. If you mean, do I think people have been seeing extraterrestrial spaceships, then my answer would be an unequivocal and flat no.
The point is that anyone that you approach to discuss proof has a different requirement for proof.
L.J. Lorenzen, an electronics designer and officer in the Aerial Phenomenon Research Organization.
Proof isn't an absolute thing. It depends on the requirements of the provee, I guess. And the most physical scientists say the kind of proof they want is something they can hold in their hand or take into their laboratory. Well, you know, in courts of law, we don't require that kind of proof. We require, for instance, overwhelming substantial evidence. Well, that's what we've got in the case of the unidentified flying object.
From Studio One, the Voice of America presents Unidentified Flying Objects. The debate continues. Your narrator is Harry Monroe.
In 1947, an American businessman piloting a small private plane in the vicinity of Mount Rainier in the northwest state of Washington saw what he described as saucer-like objects. Soon, a lot of other people were claiming that they, too, were seeing unidentified flying objects. The modern era of the UFO had begun. Individuals, organizations, and even the federal government became involved. One privately financed organization that studies UFOs is NICAP, the National Investigations Committee on Aerial Phenomena. NICAP, founded in 1957, has approximately 5,000 members. It is headed by John Acuff.
Oh, actually, I've been interested in unidentified flying objects since I was very young, since they were first reported back in 1947, the first of the modern sightings anyway. My educational background is in the sciences, and as a scientist, I guess I have a curiosity about a lot of things, and UFOs were one of the things that I was very curious about.
NICAP has about 90 volunteer investigators who gather data on UFO sightings. These investigators send their material to NICAP headquarters near Washington, D.C., where it is further analyzed.
Okay, when somebody reports a UFO to NICAP or to any one of many of our government agencies, the agencies turn the report over to NICAP, and NICAP then contacts a field investigator that is nearby the witness. The investigator is somebody that we have chosen very carefully. They volunteer their time for us, by the way. They first evaluate the witness, because we are highly dependent on the testimony of an individual, so you have to know quite a bit about that particular person, whether he is a believable person or not. Then the investigation centers on the object or phenomena itself, and they try to determine everything they possibly can about the nature of this object. And then thirdly, the investigation starts centering on the environmental conditions that were in existence at the time the object was seen. About 80% of all of the reports that come in can be identified as something conventional. But the final 20% is what makes this field so very, very interesting, when you just cannot identify it as anything that we know of.
Most of NICAP's investigations are conducted within the United States, but according to John Acuff, sightings seem to be distributed throughout the whole world.
Yes, in fact, not too long ago in the country of Iran, there was a very interesting case where a rapidly moving bright light was seen over the city of Tehran and the Iranian Air Force Base in that area. Sent a jet up to try to determine what this light was. The jet came close to the object, was picking the object up on airplane radar and trailing it at a very high speed, and suddenly the pilot lost all communication with the ground and with his co-pilot, so he decided he should turn around and go back, which he immediately did. Another jet was then scrambled. He got very close to the object, and suddenly the object sped up and started pacing him out in front, and he too had the object on cockpit radar in the plane, as well as visual sighting of it. And, this is the kind of case that we particularly like to get, because there is hard data in there. That radar return backs up the visual impressions of the witnesses, and the witnesses in the case are people who are very, very well qualified to observe something in the sky. A pilot is about as good of a witness as you can find.
Even the most experienced flight crews can be grossly in error in trying to report or describe what they have seen in broad daylight. And their errors can be even more serious in darkness.
Aviation writer and author Philip Klass tells of a specific case he investigated.
June 5, 1969, an American Airlines jetliner was flying over St. Louis, headed east for Washington, D.C. A few miles west of that airliner was a United Airlines airplane, and several miles behind the United aircraft was an Air National Guard fighter plane. All of these aircraft operated by very experienced civil and military flight crews. Now, the time was about 6 o'clock in the evening, and it was in the summertime, so it was broad daylight, unlimited visibility. And suddenly, a member of the crew in the lead airplane looked to the east and said, "My God, what's that?" And here, coming at them in what seemed to be a mid-air collision situation, was not one, but a squadron of what they described as being metallic, rocket-propelled UFOs. At the last moment, the UFOs seemed to maneuver out of the way, and the crew called down to the St. Louis Tower and said, "We've just had a near miss with some UFOs. Do you have any unidentified targets on your radar scope?" And the controller came back and said, "Yes, we do have two unidentified targets." Now, the United Airlines crew had heard this radio report, and a few moments later they came on the air and said, "We saw it too." And a few moments after that, the jet fighter pilot came on the radio and said, "My gosh, they nearly got me. If they hadn't maneuvered out of my way, there would have been a collision." Now, we know exactly what it was that these pilots mistook for a squadron of flying saucers. It was a meteor or a fireball re-entering the atmosphere out of the east. And the reason we know precisely what it was and what the UFO looked like was that an alert newspaper photographer named Alan Harkrader out at Peoria was lucky enough to get a picture of it.
From 1947 to 1969, the United States Air Force took an active interest in investigating reports of unidentified flying objects. The Air Force's study was called Project Blue Book. Air Force Captain Gary Hawksworth explains.
The investigation was conducted under the name Project Blue Book by the Foreign Technology Division at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base in Ohio. And when the final report was done, or when a report on that investigation was done by the University of Colorado, that popularly became known as the Blue Book also.
The report, prepared by the University of Colorado, was officially entitled Scientific Study of Unidentified Flying Objects. It was later reviewed by the National Academy of Sciences. Again, Captain Hawksworth.
The result of the investigations and the studies that were conducted during this 22-year period was that no UFO that was reported, investigated, or evaluated by the Air Force ever gave any indication of a threat to our national security. There's been no evidence indicating that sightings categorized as unidentified are extraterrestrial vehicles.
NICAP's John Acuff questions the way the government handled its study of UFOs.
The United States government did study UFOs for about 22 years. We do not feel that the research effort was of the highest quality. Certainly it is something that is unknown. The U.S. government should be studying it, but all official announcements are that they are not studying UFOs.
Gabriel Green of the Amalgamated Flying Saucer Clubs of America offers his opinion. Mr. Green, once a photographer with the Los Angeles City Board of Education, resigned his job so he could work full-time studying UFOs.
The Air Force of the United States was charged with the security of the skies over our nation, and they have constantly said that the UFOs do not constitute a threat to our security, since with their more advanced technology, if they had chosen to, they could have conquered not only this nation, but the rest of the world when they first came here. But they are here in our skies only as observers, trying to impart enough information so that our societies can advance spiritually to the point where we can control our technology constructively and use it for the benefit of man rather than to destroy ourselves.
Mr. Green maintains that government leaders, both in the United States and elsewhere, are aware of and have had contact with visitors from outer space. However, he claims most of these contacts have remained secret. He offers a reason why.
The main one seems to be that since our economy is based on fossil fuel power, such as gas, coal, oil, that the introduction of a new type of power, which would make obsolete overnight all present forms of power, would become a threat to our economic stability. Therefore, certain economic interests have been attempting to thwart knowledge of these extraterrestrials and have used their influence to keep mankind as ignorant as possible.
That is sheer, utter nonsense.
That's Philip Klass with an opposing view.
In the early days of the UFO movement, if you will, back in the late 40s and in the early 50s, there was some secrecy. The United States was then preparing and beginning to use spy balloons, some very large high-altitude balloons, which would be released in West Europe and were equipped with cameras that would fly over the Iron Curtain, over the Soviet Union, taking pictures. We knew, the Air Force knew, and the Central Intelligence Agency knew, that when some of those high-altitude balloons were tested in this country, they produced a lot of UFO reports. When they were seen, because they flew very high, pilots would see them far above them reflecting sunlight, and they had a metallic look. So if our own spy balloons produced UFO reports, then the question was, when we get UFO reports from parts of our country where there were none of our spy balloons flying, perhaps they were Russian spy balloons. And so there was concern that perhaps UFOs might be secret Russian reconnaissance vehicles. And there was also in the early days the possibility that they could be extraterrestrial spacecraft. Certainly in the first several years, one could not rule that out. But the Air Force declassified all of their UFO reports back around 69 or 70. All of those reports are now available to the public in the National Archives. But I work for a magazine called Aviation Week and Space Technology that is famous for breaking stories that the government doesn't want published. We have many other, the New York Times, the Washington Post, broke the Watergate scandal that President Nixon didn't want published. So if President Nixon, if Richard Nixon was not able to keep the Watergate under cover, despite all of his efforts and power, if he wasn't able to keep it under wraps for more than a year, I would say that argues that the U.S. government certainly could not keep UFOs or any UFO secret undercover for 30 years.
The oldest organization which studies UFOs is the Aerial Phenomenon Research Organization. APRO's L.J. Lorenzen tells more.
We started in Sturgeon Bay, Wisconsin, in 1952. We're the oldest organization doing this kind of work now, I think, anywhere on this planet. So we started sort of as a fan club, because in those days we thought we're going to learn the big answer any day, and we were interested possibly in bringing a little pressure to bear against government agencies that we felt sure would have the answer. But as years went by, we began to change our philosophy because the answers weren't forthcoming. In fact, we began to get less and less satisfactory answers. So then we changed our emphasis, and we began to recruit scientific consultants to help us guide our efforts. And we gradually evolved from what might originally have been called a fan club. We evolved into a bona fide research organization, which is devoted to gathering and cataloging the evidence.
The cases that APRO investigates are divided into four classes of close encounters with unidentified flying objects.
The nonspecific class, which we just call CE0, deals with any kind of structured object that's seen near enough so that structural details can be determined, and preferably we like more than one witness to these. Then close encounter type number one, we have an object seen within 500 feet of the witness. Number two, we have cases where the vehicle touched down or did something that left physical residue that can be examined. And also, sometimes the top of a tree is broken off by the passage of the vehicle. Close encounter type number three, occupants of the vehicle are seen, either in the vehicle or near it if landed. And then probably the most crucial type of all is close encounter type number four, which involves overt interference in the life of a human.
It is this last classification, close encounter number four, that Betty and Barney Hill, a New England couple, claim to have had. The Hills say that while driving down a dark road one evening, they were abducted and taken aboard an unidentified flying object.
I wouldn't call kidnapping a friendly gesture.
This is Betty Hill, now a widow. Her husband Barney died a few years ago. To her, unidentified flying objects are real. Her story was the subject of both a book and a special television program. Here is how Mrs. Hill, in her own words, describes the crew of a UFO.
You have to remember they're just like us, individual differences, but basically they're small. And very large eyes, flat profile, almost no nose, thin slit for mouth, no hair, no ears, no eyebrows, no eyelashes.
There are other reports of humans coming face to face with extraterrestrials. The descriptions are similar to Betty Hill's. Again, L.J. Lorenzen.
I would say that two remarkable examples of correlation were a case involving Travis Walton of Snowflake, Arizona, and Sergeant Moody of Holloman Air Force Base. They described identical aliens in their stories. They did describe aliens who had large heads but were smaller in body than we are, mm-hmm. slight of build, very large eyes, a very small insignificant nose, just a slit for a mouth, very small ears, no hair, mm-hmm. no fingernails, no eyebrows. I investigated both cases, and I know that neither man could have known about the other man's case.
I've seen over 100 craft over the 20-year period. I personally met with about half a dozen different extraterrestrials.
Gabriel Green says that the extraterrestrials he met were friendly.
Most of the contacts that are of the ambassadorial type, and by that I mean a high echelon of representative who has taken the trouble to learn our language and for the purpose of communicating information to people they contact here, whom we call contactees, have been from our own solar system. They claim members of the Universal Confederation of Planets, which has legal jurisdiction of this area of space in which our planet resides. And this confederation is composed of several hundred different planets.
There probably are several dozen cases, to my knowledge, maybe a few more, in which people claim, yes, that they have been aboard a flying saucer.
Once again, Philip Klass.
Now, in the early days of the UFO or flying saucer movement back in the early 50s, there was a man named George Adamski, who is now dead, who claimed that he went on board a giant UFO on a number of occasions, but always as an invited guest. In other words, that they would, in effect, send a small flying saucer to pick him up and invite him, and he'd go up and would be entertained royally. More recently, the stories have changed. Now people claim that they were abducted against their will and taken on board the UFO for a physical examination. Now, the interesting thing is that despite these several dozen people who make these claims, and despite the fact that we human beings are great souvenir collectors, there has not been a single one of these people that has ever brought back an extraterrestrial souvenir. So it is my belief that all of these cases of people claiming to have been aboard a UFO are spurious. I would go further and say that in all but at least one case, they are, in my opinion, intentional hoaxes, because there is, by making such claims, these people have the opportunity to become internationally famous. They hope to become rich, and some of them do acquire considerable money. There is great incentive to tell a big, giant fib.
L.J. Lorenzen is not as skeptical as Philip Klass, although he does offer a note of caution.
And I do believe that there's a hard core of cases that does represent extraterrestrial investigative probes of some kind. Now, there are a lot of cases, I'm sure, where there are simply people with emotional or mental problems that take the UFO as a vehicle, no pun intended, of expression, to express their emotional problems. But it's something we have to watch for, especially mm-hmm. when we're dealing with these kidnapping and contact cases. We have to watch those very, very carefully for elements of that.
Most of those who investigate the UFO phenomena seem to agree on at least one item. The sightings occur in cycles. Here is John Acuff.
About every 5 years, there seems to be a real peak in reporting activity and UFO activity. And this has held true since 1947. There was a peak in 1952, another one in 1957, another one in 62 and 63, and so on up until 1973 was the last peak. If this cycle continues to exist, we would expect a peak in 1978 again.
There should be a rash of UFO sightings. Now, the reason I make this prediction is that the movie producer, Steven Spielberg, who produced the thriller about sharks known as Jaws, has produced a new thriller about UFOs.
The motion picture Mr. Klass is talking about is Close Encounters of the Third Kind, a fictionalized account of extraterrestrials visiting this planet. Close Encounters premiered in the United States in November.
Now, my theory is that the UFO flaps are essentially produced by psychology. In other words, that when there is a lot of news about UFO reports in the newspapers and radio and television and the movie theaters, that this induces more people to go out looking at night, and with more people out looking, they're going to see meteors, re-entering satellites, aircraft doing flight test maneuvers, etc. And so the Spielberg movie, I'm looking forward to it, because I think it will provide a very valuable test that these are actual craft that come every 5 years, and every 5 years they explore a different part of the U.S. And my theory that the psychological aspects of the problem are the dominant ones, and if that's correct, we can expect not only a rash of UFO reports, but we can expect many, many more reports of people who claim to have been abducted and taken aboard a flying saucer, who claim to have seen strange, mysterious little creatures, creatures similar to those that will appear in the Spielberg movie.
Will we or won't we see an upsurge of UFO reports in the near future? Are they real or are they not? John Acuff.
We can only answer it with any honesty at all by saying that we know what UFOs are not. We know that they are not anything conventional. Then beyond that, you have to start speculating and theorizing. And this is a lot of fun to do, but it is not factual as yet. But, of course, one of the theories is that UFOs might be extraterrestrial spacecraft visiting us, just as we have taken some very small steps away from our planet. Maybe somebody else has been able to take a much larger step and start visiting us.
From Studio One, the Voice of America has brought you Unidentified Flying Objects. The debate continues. The voices heard on this program were taped in Northridge, California, Phoenix, Arizona, the Pentagon, and the Voice of America studios in Washington, D.C. Your narrator was Harry Monroe. Unidentified Flying Objects, The Debate Continues, was written and directed by Dan Noble. This is Jack Weitzel inviting you to join us again next week at the same time for another presentation from the Voice of America, Studio One. Stay tuned now for the news which follows on many of these same frequencies. Thank you.